This week's mailbag comes to us from Erin. Hey, Mom, where's my medical binder again? That's the question that has me smiling big today. My 18-year-old is getting his forms filled out for his move to college later this month. And I love, love, love that he knows, first of all, what a medical binder is, and second of all, that's where he'll find the information that he needs. It's true that we teach our kids simply by being an example. He may not make his own binders yet, and he may not do the Sunday basket yet, but they are in his vocabulary.
Do you have an Organized 365 success story? If so, we would love to hear about it. Please send us an email at customerservice@organized365 and tell us how you have taken back your home, your paper, and your life with Organized 365.
Welcome to the Organized 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. They say that 10,000 hours studying anything makes you an expert. And if you work 2,000 hours per year, which was a 40-hour work week minus some vacations and some holidays, it takes you 5 years to develop that 10,000 hours. So since I've been doing Organized 365 for 11 years now, and I've definitely worked more than 40 hours a week, I could safely say that I'm well on my way to well over 20,000 hours, having focused on specifically female heads of household in their homes and what it takes for them to get organized so they have more time to do what they're uniquely created to do. And what is this thing we're uniquely created to do? So I've been thinking about this and researching and analyzing and specializing in homes and specifically female heads of household for over a decade. And one of the things that I have thought about is time. Like, I really talk about time and a lot about the invisible work that we are doing. So I've had this idea in the back of my head, and I'm going to try to articulate it to you here. And this idea is about six-figure time. Six-figure time. What is six-figure, and what is six-figure time? So when I started Organized 365, I was a blogger, and I was in a lot of the blogospheres, and the big thing was to make $100,000. Like, if you could make $100,000 a year with your blog, you would be a six-figure income earner. Now, in 2012, as I'm reading all of this about becoming a six-figure income earner, I had just quit my teaching job at a private school, and I was making $1,000 per paycheck. So I knew that in 2012, to replace the teaching salary that I had just left, I needed to make $2,000 a month. When I think back on that, I'm like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe I was working for $24,000 take-home pay a year. Like, that's like, wow, I was working like 70, 80 hour weeks for $24,000 a year. The thought of being a six-figure income earner ever, I mean, was just like so far removed from my mind. So I'm like, well, I mean, like, to become a six-figure income earner, like, who are these people? Well, how do they live? Like, I just had no frame of reference for what this kind of life would be like. And there were two books that I read early in my Organized 365 career that really helped me to understand, okay, these are who female six-figure income earners are. And this is kind of what I was striving to achieve. The first one was Laura Vanderkam has a book out called I Know How She Does It. And in there, she analyzed the time of six-figure income earners, which primarily are doctors, lawyers, business owners, high-level C-suite executives. These are the people that are making six figures. Some bloggers also, but not that many. So in her book, which was fascinating because I just love to learn about all different kinds of people and how different people live, at the end of that book, it was fascinating to me how they spent their time, but a lot of it was on hiring outside help. Like, these six-figure female business people had nannies and chefs and people that drove their kids and cooks and like, it was just like a whole staff that they were managing at home. And then also they went to this other job. And to me, that just seemed like a lot more work and completely unattainable for me. Now, I know in the past on the podcast, I have recommended, you know, getting housekeeping help or hiring a mother's helper. And sometimes you do want to or need to hire help, but often, especially for me, 2012, no way I'm hiring anybody. I had three outfits that fit me. Like, I didn't even have clothes. I wasn't going to hire anybody. So the other book I read in the first 3 years of Organized 365 was a book by Barbara Stanny called Overcoming Under-Earning. And she talked a lot about how, especially females, don't value their worth and they don't value the skills that they bring to the marketplace. And I was like, okay, I can relate to this. And she had a lot of mindset work in that book that really started helping me think about, okay, well, what would a six-figure female earner like think and do? And so these ideas are like percolating in the back of my head as I'm going into homes and organizing in Cincinnati. And when you're an in-home professional organizer, you're earning anywhere from like $40 an hour when you start to, at the end of my career, I was billing out $150 an hour for two organizers to go into homes, neither of which were me. So it's, you know, $40 to $75 an hour. That's what it was in Cincinnati. Some places like New York, you're looking at $125 an hour. Like, I mean, you're making a lot of money for a service provider. So I was making good money, you know, $40 an hour, $50 an hour. I thought I was doing great. But also, when you're an in-home professional organizer, you are organizing six-figure people. I was organizing doctors and lawyers and business owners and C-suite executives. And so I was seeing what it was like to be in multi-million dollar homes in Cincinnati, how those families run and the kind of help that they were hiring. I know one of the families that I organized, there was always help in the house when I was doing organization. There was cleaning help, there was administrative help, there was just a lot going on. And so additionally, I was starting to see how six-figure income earners lived. It was just interesting. It was just interesting to me because I hadn't really thought about, before I started Organize 365, how much money other people made or how they used the income that they earned in order to save them time at home. I had always wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. I loved being a stay-at-home mom, so I wasn't looking to become a corporate professional. But the thing I want to really talk about today is about six-figure time. A six-figure income, what I observed was that making $100,000 or more allowed you to have more choice and allowed these families to have more time. And I'm sorry, I'm recording this podcast in Chicago in a hotel room, so you might hear some ambulances and fire trucks outside. It's the noise of downtown Chicago. And I thought, you know, there's this story, and I'm going to paraphrase it, but basically it is a businessman goes on a trip, and he decides to go fishing, and he goes fishing with this man, and they go out in a boat, and they catch some fish, and they come in, and the guy fries up the fish and then he ties up his nets and he goes to bed for the night and he's sleeping in a hut. And the businessman says, you know what we could do? You should employ more people and you can have more boats and then you can earn more income. And then when you're done, you can retire. And he said, and then you can have, you know, a house on the beach and you can live in a hut. And, you know, and the guy's looking at me, he's like, I already have this dream that you're talking about now. Like, I am already living in the hut on the beach. Like, and I just took you out and you paid me money and I fish for a day and I ate my fish and I'm happy. And so I say that because, you know, for a while I was reading blogs and listening to podcasts that really said that you needed to earn a certain dollar amount so that you then could do what you wanted to do with your time and your money. But do we really need to earn that dollar amount at all? Or can we have six-figure time without a six-figure salary? Now, whether or not you have a six-figure salary, I think the idea of thinking of something that is beyond what you have today and then thinking about what it would take to achieve that or what that life would be like can inform how you live today. So I want to talk about six-figure time, not how people who earn $100,000 earn their money or spend their money, but what do they do with the time they have? And there are a lot of people that make millions of dollars and are time poor. There are a lot of people that have no income whatsoever, and they are time rich. And I want to talk about the difference between time poverty and being rich in time. Okay, so the third book I'm going to talk about, the kind of, you know, as I put all these books together in my head, this one gives me the third piece I want to talk to you about, is Rory Vaden's book, Procrastinate on Purpose. I've talked about this before, about how it's kind of the male version of the Sunday basket. And he talks about how time multipliers add a third dimension to how they look at time. Normal people look at time as in like how much time is passing and what can you get done. And then time multipliers add this third axis, which is significance. As in, if I spend my time doing this today, will it make a difference a month from now, a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now? And time multipliers always make their time decisions based on the significance factor of how they're going to spend their time. And I definitely am a time multiplier. So what do we want? What do you want? Why do you want more time? What would you do with more time? And I think initially, it's kind of like winning the lottery. Like, okay, if I won the lottery, I'd pay off my house. Like everybody has the same exact answer, right? If I had more time, I would get the rest of my to-do list done. Like, you know, you have this dream. I have this dream. I'm sitting in a hotel right now. I have so many to-dos around me. I can't get them done in the amount of time that I have in this one little piece of time between the conference and my next appointment. I'm like, I brought all of this work that I thought I could get crammed into this little bit of amount of time that I have alone in this hotel room without any other obligations, right? So we think that if I could just get my house organized, if I could get my to-do list done, you know, with my time, I could do this. And then what? You get more time. Okay, well, what would you do with that time? Keep asking yourself, what would you do with that time that does not end up being an actionable to-do that you are already doing? And I think part of why we never get to six-figure time, once you understand what it is because we don't know what we would do with that time if we got to it. I mean, initially you think, well, I just get all of my to-dos done. Well, what if all of your to-dos were done? First of all, I've been there twice in my life. It's extremely boring. I create chaos, more ideas. But basically, you have to have something that is bigger that you want to go after, which will propel you to get your to-dos done. So I think what we most want is we want time freedom. We want to be able to do with our time what we want to do with our time instead of our employers, our family, or our house telling us what to do. We want to be in charge of what we do with our time. We want to have choice. And then we want our time to have purpose and meaning. So the number one way to do this, to get to six-figure time that I have found, is that you need to be proactive and not reactive. And I talk about this all the time. I talk about this idea of being proactive and not being reactive. This is not a new organized 365 concept. And that's probably what I noticed in these people whose houses I was organizing is they had me there organizing. Like they were proactive. They were like, I want this project done. I'm hiring this person. They're going to get this done. But even without hiring the person to get it done, when you set aside time to do organization in your house, you are being proactive because organization is completely optional. Reacting to a phone call, a direct message, a piece of mail, a paper that comes home from school, that's reactive. Proactive is saying, I'm going to go clean out my storage room today. Like that is choosing how you're going to spend your time on purpose so that it gives you more time in the future. So we need to start not only planning our big projects of the day, but becoming a 100% proactive versus reactive person. And this is a habit and a muscle that once you grow it, oh my gosh, it is so empowering. It is so freeing. And also it is so annoying when you are not in control. Like when something reactive happens and you really have to react and you cannot be proactive, like you're so annoyed. Like you're so annoyed because you're like, I don't want to be reactive anymore. I want to be proactive in absolutely everything. And the way to do this, the most practical way to become a 100% proactive person is you have to take every single thought, every single request, and every single circumstance that you find yourself in, and you need to stop and change whatever it is into a proactive state. You're like, well, what do you mean by that? Okay, so you have an idea that you need to give the dog the flea and tick medicine. Okay, so you write it down on an index card. This has to be done. Reactive would be like, oh yeah, I need to get the flea and tick medicine, and you go and you do it right away. Or you write it down, you do it, and then you throw away the card. Okay, I had the thought, I did the thing, I threw it away. Proactive is, okay, this needs to happen every single month. There needs to be a proactive way that I know that it comes up, and the dog gets his flea and tick medicine every month, and I don't have to think about it anymore. It's on a scheduled plan. I do it the first of the month, da-da-da-da-da. So proactive versus reactive is the activity is going to happen, but you are going to purposely plan when and how it happens versus when your brain reminds you or the vet tells you or you get a notice in the mail, you're not going to respond. You're going to proactively plan how this is going to happen. So what are some simple ways that we can look at in a regular everyday lifestyle about how this is going to happen where you move from reactive to proactive? The first one is creating an automatic bill pay or a regular cadence of paying your bills versus waiting for them to come in and paying them. And I picked this one because most people have already done this. You probably have some kind of a bill pay system. But then there are a few bills that you can't figure out how to get in the automated system, or like our energy bill changes the amount that it's going to be. And a couple of months ago, I was like, this is absolutely ridiculous that I still have bills that are not automatically just being debited or taken care of. And initially, when I wanted to do automatic bill pay, part of the reason why I could not automate everything was because I didn't know how much money was going to be in the checking account. And I still don't always know how much money is going to be in the checking account when these bills are due, but a lot of bills you can pay on a credit card. And I'm not saying to use a credit card for debt purposes. I'm saying use a credit card for automation purposes because you're going to pay your electric bill no matter what it is. Like if your electric bill to heat your house is $200 or $400, it's not like you're going to be like, I'm not paying this bill because it's too expensive. Like you're going to pay it. So it doesn't matter if you pay it through an ACH transaction through your checking account or if you put it on a credit card and then you pay the credit card off. Either way, the electric bill is going to be the same amount. So I finally went through my bills and I was like, okay, what is not getting automatically paid and how do I most want to pay this? So when you lay out all the bills that you need to have paid, our mortgage is very expensive, our car payments, there's another big bill. Oh, we redid our bathroom, so we have that on like a 12-month same as catch. That's a pretty big bill. So these bills have to be spread out so that when the bills come in, our salaries cover the bills that are coming in. So if I had to pay for the bathroom and our mortgage and our car payments all within 10 days, then I wouldn't have enough cash in my bank account. So there are a couple ways you could do this. You can have like everything due on the 10th of the month and you just save up your money all month. And then you know that like, okay, in the span of 3 days, our bank account's going to go way down and then I'll replenish it for the next month. Or you could say, which is what I did, you can have like, okay, I have a big bill due every time we get a paycheck. And I know the paycheck comes in and the mortgage money goes out and then there's X amount of money left over. So that means the bathroom payment, which is my second biggest payment, that one is when the next paycheck comes in and I know that one comes out and then we have whatever money is left over. When you sit down proactively to do automatic bill pay, a lot of things come up. One, you may be overspending. We are. Or you may find out that like it's just really hard to line up all of the bill pays to match all of your salaries. And then both Greg and I get paid every 2 weeks instead of on the 15th and the 30th of the month. So we have 2 months per year where we get 3 salary payments, which is great. Because Greg's like, oh, we get an extra payment this month. I'm like, no, that's not how this works. That's not how any of this works, Greg. Because then it screws up my next month for like when these automatic bill pays are coming out. Do you see what I'm saying? Because if you have 3 payments, the first, the middle of the month, and the end of the month, 1 month, that means the next month, your salaries are coming in like on the 12th and the 24th. And anyway, you get the idea. It's not actually as helpful as Greg thinks that it is. But you need to wrestle with this. This is part of being a six-figure time person, a six-figure time person. Like think about people who make $100,000, doctors, lawyers, business owners, accountants, and then people are just really good in whatever field they're in. But those are the 4 categories of jobs that you can have where a six-figure salary is something that you work steadily to. Teaching is not one of them, but you can be a six-figure time person and be a teacher because you wrestle with all these questions about how do you actually get your bill pays to be automatic, where you don't have to think about them. And so what I did is I took the things that were variable, like our water bill and our, well, the water bill, for whatever reason, has to be manually paid. I cannot figure out how to get that one to be automatic. But everything else, I figured out how to get automatic, and I put it on a credit card. And then those credit card payments, I do have to calculate how much we're paying out in our credit cards. So those are not automatic either, but I know exactly when they happen. So now everything in my bill pay is automatic, and I know I have to pay the water bill, and I know I have to figure out what we're paying on the credit cards when the credit cards are due, and everything else comes in and goes out. Now, I've told you before that I still get paper statements for all of the bills that I have, even though they're set up automatically. And I do that because when I see the bill come in the mail, I literally sometimes don't even open it. I just tear it and I shred it. But I go, oh yeah, that's right. That car payment's going to come out in the next 7 days. That mortgage is going to come out in the next 7 days. So when I see the statement come in, I just mentally do some calculations. Is everything still going to work in the bank account? Yes. Okay. It's just like quality control. That is an example of how a six-figure earner would do six-figure time, setting up everything in bill pay automatically. Let's go to the second idea. The second idea would be everything related to food. We just can't get around the fact that we need calories to live. And we like to eat the calories that aren't necessarily good for us to live. Figuring out what you need from the grocery store, going to the grocery store, getting things from the grocery store, planning the meals, cooking the meals, the whole food thing. It just takes so much time. How can you make food proactive instead of reactive? Now, one caveat. If food is your passion project, if you don't know what a passion project is the thing that you love to do, and like maybe you want to have more time so you could be more of a gourmet cook. I do not. I want to have more time so I can grow Organize 365 or do a puzzle. I mean, my dream is that I would never have to think about food again and someone would bring me my food, but I do not have a chef and I don't see that anywhere in my future. So I have to proactively figure out what to do with food. So unless it's your passion project, you love being in the kitchen, this is like your release and you love, okay, for those of you, you can stop listening now. For all of the rest of us where calories are how we would like to maintain our health and is how we get the energy to do the things that we are uniquely created to do, how can you make everything related to food, getting preparation and culling proactive instead of reactive in your home? Now, the way that I have done this is that I live with all adults and Greg does all of the cooking and meal preparation and purchasing and all of that. And so I have created my own plan, which is I have a coffee and a granola bar in the morning. I get a salad from Panera for lunch. And then I have a protein bar, like I'm in Chicago, so I just had a protein bar for like a late snack at the end of the day. And then I'll just get something simple in the evening, or I skip dinner a lot. I kind of do reverse, was that fasting? Where most people like they get up and they wait until noon to have their first meal and then they have lunch and dinner. I get up and I have breakfast and I have lunch and then I have like a protein bar like around 3 or 4. And then most nights I don't eat dinner anymore. I don't know. I think it's because I'm 50. So for me to be 100% proactive in my grocery, I need to just figure out how many K-cups of caramel coffee, the sugar that I use, the granola bar that I eat, the protein bar that I eat, how many of each of those do I need so I could just put it on an auto ship and just have it delivered to the house so I don't even have to think about it anymore and I just have the right amount. I haven't gotten that far, but I know at least what I'm eating. Now, you may be like, that's nice, Lisa. I've got like 18 kids staring at me all day long and they want to eat all day long. True. Fair. Your meal planning and the amount of food and what your job and responsibility in your household is related to food is much more significant than mine at this time in my life. But that does not mean that it can't become proactive for you. You can come up with a whole month's worth of recipes and divide them into 4 weeks. And each week needs these certain ingredients. And then you create these different automatic orders of what you need for each of these weeks. Or if you don't want to go that far, there are things that you eat every single week. Like every single week we get milk. Every single week you get bread. Every single week you get certain things. Put all of those on an automatic order and then place a second order for all of the things that you need each week. So if you Always need butter and milk and eggs and all that. Put that in an automatic order. Until you pick up that automatic order and you're like, we have too much butter, too much eggs, too much whatever. Like, butter lasts for a long, long time. So if you accidentally get one more order that has too much butter, well, you're going to use it at the holidays. It's not a big deal. Then you go in, once you unpack your automatic order and you're like, okay, you know what? We're over on whatever, cream cheese. Then you go back into your automatic order after you've unpacked your groceries and you take that off for the next automatic order. Just put a note in your Sunday basket. Remember to add cream cheese back when we get lower. And just create all of those proactive ways in order to get your grocery shopping done quicker. Now, Greg loves to go to the grocery store. He complains about it, but he actually loves to do it. I don't know why. And he goes to three different grocery stores. I'm like, Greg, there's this thing called Clicklist where you can you could schedule it and then you can go pick it up. And then somebody told me they could just deliver it to your house. So I do Walmart just because it's the closest, but we have literally every single grocery store within 4 miles of our house, but this is the one on the way home. Now I have it delivered to the house. It's like an extra, I don't know what it is, but it's worth it for me. And it literally comes to the house. And now Abby says, hey, I'd like to earn some more money. Just let me know when you want your Walmart order picked up or when it's delivered, I'll put it away. I'm like, sold. Like I'm paying whatever she wants for whatever anyway. Might as well have her put away the groceries. How can you look at every single step in what you do with food and automate as much as possible and reduce as much as possible the time that it takes you to do it or the reactivity to the program? Now, when I was a stay-at-home mom and the kids were little, I did a Sunday basket all the way back then. And I would say to Greg and the kids, if you want anything from the grocery store, you must tell me by Sunday. And then I did all of my errands on Tuesday. So Sunday, I had all of the requests. I started making my grocery list. And then Tuesday morning, I would get up and I ran all of my errands. I would start with the errand that was the furthest one away from home, and I would just rabbit trail all the way back to the house, collecting things as I went and dropping off things as I went. And I ended up at the grocery store last, but like around 10 a.m. And I always went whenever things opened, which was earlier because it was pre-COVID. And there'd be nobody there. So I'd be in and out so super fast. And I would be home with what on Saturday would be 6 hours of errands. I would get it done within 2 hours on a Tuesday because there just weren't people in the stores and I was going first thing. So there are many, many ways in which you can make everything related to food and meals in your house proactive versus reactive. Then the last example I'll give you of the simple things you can do from moving from reactive to proactive is your Sunday basket. The first step is to write down every single thought you have. Why are you still trying to hold some of those in your head? Because I know you are. Like, oh, I don't need to write this one down. Write it down. What is the worst that happens? The worst that can happen is you run across a piece of paper that says something you already did. Great. Well, you know you did it. So that's fine. Write down everything, your ideas, your actionable to-dos, everything. Number two, print the emails. So when I reply to someone in email, I also print the email. And then that way, I remember that I replied, I remember what their request was. And then when I see that printed email again, I'm like, okay, have they followed back up with me? Is there something that I'm waiting for? Is there something more I said I would do for them? Or is this just information that I want to put in a slash pocket in case this correspondence comes around again and I want to remember what was said? I know you can search in your email. And if that works for you, then don't listen to me, but it does not work for me. So I love to go through all of my slash pockets, you know, every 4 to 6 weeks at home and at work, and I'll run across emails that are 4, 6, 8 weeks old. I'll be like, oh yeah, I want to reach out to this person again. Or, oh, I never got the follow-up from this. Or, okay, more time has passed and I've thought of another way that I can collaborate with this person. And that email printed out in a slash pocket when I'm not sitting in front of my computer, because I have a different energy when I'm not sitting in front of my computer, allows me to really process differently. And then obviously your mail goes in the Sunday basket. So the idea is to train yourself to stop creating a to-do list and to write down all your actionables and make them wait until Friday in a Friday workbox or Sunday in a Sunday basket, so that the only actionables on your to-do list or that you're holding in your hand will be a handful. And these are things that truly need to get done before the end of the week or truly need to get done before you have time to do your Friday workbox or your Sunday basket. And because you make everything else wait, until Friday or until Sunday, one of two things is going to happen. One, the opportunity will have passed and you'll be like, you know what? I thought that was a great idea, but really isn't that great idea for me at this time. Or two, when you see it again, when you go through one of these systems, you'll be like, yes, I really want to do this. And this is so important to me now. It is now going to become a priority that it will be done this week. And I know how I'm going to implement it because you can't do everything. You can't do everything. So this is a way for you to, as Rory would say, procrastinate on purpose. I'm not going to get everything done on my to-do list. So all these things that I know for sure are not going to get done this week have to wait over here in this pile. So when I go through them again, then I'll say, okay, well, is this the week they're magically going to come to the top and get done? No. Okay, they go back in the box, back in the box, back in the box. And eventually you'll say, you know what? This isn't getting done. Because I never want to prioritize. This is one of the only 10 things I'm going to get done this week. So I'm going to need to let this opportunity go. I'm going to need to let this connection go. I'm going to need to let this obligation go because I just simply don't have enough time. And there are these other things I'm really excited about working on that are more important. So here's the thing. When you are a six-figure time person, you don't have time to play chess and checkers, so you have to stop playing checkers and everything becomes chess. Every single thing that you do becomes chess. So people who have six-figure time, people who are time multipliers, do not do reactive tasks. They don't do one-off tasks. They don't just jump the checkers all over the board. One jump, ooh, I can make two jumps. Like they don't care. They don't want to jump anything. They want to think about like, okay, which, and I don't know chess, so I won't have good analogies here, but like which piece do I want to move? And then how is this ultimately going to help me get what I am going for? And I think a lot of why we live in a reactive life and why we are playing chess is because we aren't thinking far enough into the future. So I was listening to a podcast the other day. I was listening to Rachel Hollis, and she had, I think it's Ben Hardy on there. He has partnered with Dan Sullivan and is taking, Dan Sullivan has these small books, and he's turning them into traditionally published books. So the first one they did was Who, Not How, and he's working on a new one. And I rewound the podcast to listen to this quote again. He said, people do not think in the past. Like you've heard that people are think of the past and people think in the future. So future for thinking people and people who are living in the past. And he said, actually, that's not true. He said, every single person is forward thinking. Every single person is forward thinking. He said, the difference is how far into the future they can think. I was like, wait, what? He was like, yeah, everybody is thinking in the future. It's just that some people are only thinking to the future of 6 hours from now, or the end of the week, or possibly the end of the month. And then there are people like me that are thinking 3, 5, 10 years in the future, 25 years in the future, like what's it going to be like? And I was like, oh, wow, that's interesting. And that may be you. I know it was me. Like whenever life gets going too fast that I feel like roadkill because I've just gotten run over, I'm like, okay, how do I make it to the next meal? How do I make it to bedtime? How do I make it to my hot bath? How do I make, like, you just start going the timeline of how far into the future that you can think because your life is so chaotic, it gets shorter and shorter and shorter. And I remember when the kids were little, when I was having a really particular hard day, I was like, Lisa, you can make it one more hour. You can make it one more hour. You can, and I literally was just crying all day long thinking, you can make it one more hour. You can make it till Greg gets home. You can make it till the next meal. You can make it till the kids go to bed. You can make it till, and it was just like, what is the next thing on my horizon that I could focus my eyes on that I'm like, okay, when I make it to this. The other time I feel this way is when I'm sick. You know, when you're sick and you don't feel good, you're like, okay, if I take the Advil, it'll kick in within 30 minutes. Or when you have a little baby that's got an ear infection, we thought Grayson had an ear infection the other day, and I gave him the liquid Tylenol, and I'm rocking in him, and I'm looking at the clock, and I'm like, okay, in 20 minutes, the Tylenol will have kicked in. His ears should feel better. Like, you're like, I'm waiting for 20 minutes. Okay, he seems to be better. Okay, I can put him down to bed now. And so we're always looking at these short time horizons when we are overwhelmed or when we don't feel well. But sometimes what happens is we get locked into that. And we're like, okay, another 20 minutes, another 20 minutes. And what I find that I do when I get locked in these really small time horizons for long periods of time And this is why I think we love the to-do list, is we're like, okay, I've got 15 minutes. What can I do to help my future self in these 15 minutes? Then we go over to a to-do list. We're like, okay, I can empty the dishwasher and I can start a load of laundry, which does help your future self. So that is helpful, but it is a reactive proactivity. You see what I mean when I say that? Like, it's just like survival. You're just basically surviving in a slightly more proactive way. It is not the six-figure time that I'm talking about. Six-figure time, I mean, you're thinking chess, not checkers. You have a larger capacity and you have more time to deal with. So you're able to think more complexly about time. How in the world, Lisa, do you think more complexly about time? Like nobody even, that's not even the right way you use that word. I know. That's why I'm a podcaster and not as much of a writer, because none of my words are grammatically correct. But if it was a thing, how do we do that? Planning days. Yes. I know I'm unusual. I am an odd bird. I'm well aware I'm an odd bird. If you have attended any of our planning days for work or for home, you were overwhelmed by the end of it, because the way I think about time is probably seven-figure time. Time is where everything comes from. Like, without time, you don't have capacity. So time gives you capacity. So I want to optimize time to my advantage in every way I know how. And now that I've figured out how to optimize work time by planning four times a year, and home time by planning three times a year, I get so much more done. I have so much more capacity, but also I have so much more impact. And I think that's what we ultimately want. Like, we don't want to just spend time to spend time. We're not trying to become proactive so that we can get a longer to-do list done. Like, at first, that's what I was doing. Oh my gosh, I spent years. Then I make longer and longer and longer to-do lists. Like of random stuff, dusting, cleaning, and I would get the list done, but there was no impact there. Like, our house was cleaner, it was more organized, but I wasn't making a lasting impact with all this efforting I was doing in getting these to-do lists done. But the way I spend my time today has a huge impact on our family, on the Organized 365 employees, on you listening to this podcast, on myself as a person growing. I'm growing faster, changing, developing more now than I ever have in my entire life. I am using time for ultimate impact in every single sphere that I am in. And it is so empowering and so freeing and so fun. It is so fun. And these planning days make me level up every single quarter in my business and every single trimester in my home. And that's the difference. That's the difference of six-figure time. It's not about getting all your actionable to-dos done at home and your house looking perfect so you could have a TV show. It's about getting your house organized so that you have time, so that you don't have anything to do at home, so you can go out and make more impact, and you can impact your family and your community and do what you are uniquely created to do. But the reason why you might not be doing that, even though you're like, okay, yeah, that's what I want, that sounds great, but I have so many things to do on my to-do list, it is so much more comfortable to just check things off of to-do lists and do lower level tasks because you feel productive than to wrestle with what are you uniquely created to do? What could you be using your time better for? Yeah, we don't know. We have no idea. But the only way you're going to know is to, one, have enough time to wrestle with that question, and two, try starting stuff. Like, you don't know. You don't know what you're going to be doing until you try it. And then maybe you don't like it. Don't do that thing again. Then do something else, and on and on and on. So six-figure money. If you think about six-figure money, people who make $100,000 or more, they did not get that skill overnight. They didn't like wake up and all of a sudden they're like a brain surgeon. No, they had to go to school. They had to practice. They had to have the job. They had to put in a lot of time. Remember at the beginning of this podcast, I said that I'm more than 20,000 hours into specializing in home organization and productivity. I'm probably fairly close to 30,000 hours at this point. That's a lot of time to be thinking about how you use your home. This is not the first time I've thought about what might be stopping you from having more time to make more impact. It's another lesson that I am giving on how you can overcome your limiting beliefs and stop doing what seems to be urgent and important but actually isn't, so that you can press into what you're uniquely created to do so that you can have more impact. So six-figure income earners spend a lot of time growing their skill. It's fine that you're spending a lot of time listening to the podcast or going through the courses in order to become a more organized, productive person. They also devote a lot of time to networking and making connections with other like-minded people. So being in the certification, coming to a paper organizing retreat, listening to the podcast, being inside of the interactive clubs, going to any of the certified organizers' events, being around the other organized 365 community members who are also investing their time and their resources and becoming a more productive person with their time so that they can have more impact in the world. Like, you're surrounding yourself with people who are like-minded. That is a good use of your time. And six-figure income earners change their role as they grow. They change their role as they grow. So if you take a brain surgeon, they obviously started out as a medical student, and then they had a residency, an internship, and then they had one job, and they got promoted and took more classes and specialized and on and on and on. You would not expect the brain surgeon to also do the same things that they did in their previous role or as an intern or as a resident or as a medical student, right? Because that's not their highest use for you. Their highest use is to do the surgery and to be well rested for the surgery. So you don't want them doing anything that they don't need to do that is at their highest level of capability for their uniqueness. This applies to you at your house as well. So I want to really hit this home as we go on. This is going to be a little bit longer of a podcast. Productivity is not about doing the same thing faster. That is the old paradigm. That's the 80s, 90s, early 2000s. That's what we thought productivity was. How do I take this to-do list? How do I task stack it? And how do I do it faster so that I can do more on my to-do list? That is the paradigm I've been living in for a long time. And now what I realize is, no, we're supposed to be working our way out of a job. We're supposed to be working our way out of a job. As your family grows and changes, as your household grows and evolves, you are growing and evolving. Your role is growing and evolving. What you do is changing and growing. You don't need to do everything you did last year, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. You don't. You have to level up and do less and eliminate the lower level tasks so that you have time for bigger impact. And you're like, what? How in the heck? Hello, the house has to be clean, Lisa, unless you have like fairies coming in there going to do this for me. Okay, how do we do this? How do we practically do this? Let's talk back about the food thing, because we all are going to have to eat for the rest of our lives. Like, it's just a thing. How can we level up and do less? Well, why don't you go with those little Travala ovens and have the food literally shipped to your door? You open up the box, you put it in the little oven, you come out, you got a full meal. I mean, I've looked at it. I just don't eat dinner anymore, so I don't see the point. But then I was thinking, oh, this might work for Joey. Like, that little oven eliminates going to the grocery store, buying the ingredients, having a recipe at all, cutting it all up. No, you literally open up the box. It's like a TV dinner, only it's fresh. You put in this little oven. You scan the code. The oven cooks it for you perfectly. Come out, eat it. It's in a little disposable thing. You throw it away. There aren't even dishes. I mean, that would eliminate a lot of this whole grocery thing. Now, does this work if you're a stay-at-home mom of 89 children? No. But in middle age, does it work? Heck yeah, it works. Totally works. And the amount of money that you would spend on those little meals, you save by not going in the grocery store and buying all the impulse things that you would buy and throw away, and there's less waste. And I mean, like, game on. I'm totally in on this program, except it's not working for our family right now. But that's, if I was on my own, that's what I would be doing. I already told you how I've simplified my food as much as possible, and cooking is Greg's passion project and Abby's too, so it's not going to get more systematized at our house right now. But if Abby and Grayson move out and it's just Greg and I'm sure we're going to go to this Travala oven because I want to travel instead of, you know, have him going to the grocery store on Saturday, and he would like to also. So let's talk about cleaning. We haven't talked about cleaning. This is another one that we all have to do, right? And I do outsource cleaning. I've cleaned my own house. I've cleaned other people's houses, and I have my house cleaned. I've done every scenario of the cleaning. So if you're not going to hire somebody to clean your house, which you totally don't need to, then I want you to figure out what is your minimum level of clean. We're always looking at like, what's the maximum? How do I get an A? Who cares? Who is going to be in your house? There is no such thing as a white glove test. I mean, unless Mickey Mouse is coming around your house and checking, and what? Nobody's checking. Nobody knows. Nobody cares. What is the minimum you could possibly do in order to keep your home at the level of cleanliness that's good enough for you? So here's just a sample. Let's say you just have 90 minutes a week. So you're going to have to devote 90 minutes a week because you can't do it with no time. You definitely have to spend time. All right, get the bathrooms done. Take out the trash. Do the kitchen. Make sure you do the showers and the floors. Wash the towels. That's it. 90 minutes. You could probably get it done in 90 minutes. Then one time a month, clean out the oven, clean out the microwave, wash your sheets, wash the washing machine, wash the dishwasher. Cracks me up. We have to wash appliances. Now you may say, ew, I do my sheets every week. And I say, I take a bath. I go to bed clean. I don't know. I don't even do my sheets every month. It's like, you do you. But where did you get your ideas of how clean your house has to be, what you need to do in order to achieve a clean house? How can you reduce those expectations? You notice I didn't even say dust in here. Dust when you see dust. This is going to be about every 6 weeks or when you can't stand it anymore. But at a minimum, if you do this minimum amount of cleaning, this is going to be 9 to 12 hours a month. And really, you're probably spending more like 20 to 30 hours a month cleaning your house. Because when I was cleaning my house, I was spending about 3 or 4 hours every Saturday on the task. It's a lot of time. And that's why I do say if you're going to hire out one thing, hire out the house cleaning, even if it's only once a month, because it is amazing the return on time. So until you want that 9 to 12 hours a month for a couple of $100, keep doing your own cleaning. But this is the best return on investment of your money out for time back is having your house cleaned. So here's the ultimate where I've been going this whole entire podcast. What is the ultimate in six-figure time? Pretty much nothing that I've shared with you today has been like, yes, I need to do that, or I had never thought of it that way. Maybe you're like, oh, that's a different way of thinking about something, but yeah, I've probably had that time thought before. Back to what Ben Hardy said about everyone is forward thinking, just some people are only thinking to the next meal or to the end of the day or the end of the week or the end of the month. If you are a person that has a hard time thinking to 3 months from now or 1 year from now, I believe this is a skill that you could develop over time. I believe you could start to get longer and longer time horizons by, first of all, taking care of the urgent and the important and automating it so that you have more capacity for thinking, but also because you're just ready to look further. Excellent example of this is the Holiday Blitz that's coming up next. The Holiday Blitz will help you think all the way to the end of the year. You'll think through all of the holidays that are coming proactively and be able to enjoy your holidays without any worry. So that's going to open up the beginning of November. We would love to have you join us. We'd love to have you invite everyone that you know to do the Holiday Blitz. It's a great way. Holiday Blitz, back to school blitz, out with the old. All of these blitzes are designed to get you to think further, give you a longer time horizon, and to be proactive about what we know is going to be in your future next. So that's a great way to think about it. But we are so used to optimizing and becoming productive and prioritizing holidays, bill planning, meal planning, the detritus of everyday life. But I think where the true freedom comes from and the true six-figure time is to be able to think about not how you're going to get the work done at home in the office in the next quarter, the next year, the next 3 years, the next 5 years, but how are you going to impact the relationships you have at work, at home, and your friend groups in the next 3 months, 1 year, 3 years, 5 years? And this is the part we don't prioritize because there's no one holding us accountable to it. There's no financial bill that has to be paid. There's no physical need that has to be met, like feeding people. It's a very proactive and a very forward-thinking thing in order to think the way I'm about to tell you. And this is how I think as a six-figure time person in relation to my Sunday basket. There are four categories in your Sunday basket. Pink is personal, purple is household, blue is family, and green is finances. And the Sunday basket takes about 6 weeks for it to become a habit. And in those 6 weeks, you go from being reactive to proactive in almost everything. And in this podcast, I've shown you how you could take all that a little bit further. This is the chess level that really is going to make the biggest difference in your life, in the impact that you can make in your family. So when you are going through the Sunday basket, the pink color, when you're in the Sunday basket club and they're focusing on the pink week, I want you to think about not just how you've already labeled your pink slash pockets, but what is it that your future self needs in order to become the person that you are trying to become, the person that is going to make the impact that you ultimately want to make in the world? Is there a course you need to take? Is there a book that you need to read? Is there a person that you need to connect with? Is there a girls' night out or a trip that you want to schedule in order to get away from it all so you could think differently about the life that you are living right now? For your purple, when you're thinking about purple and you're thinking about the household and everything that needs to be done, what is it that if you could do it now would save you so much time in the future or change your house so much that it would just give you a different time freedom? So I mentioned that we redid our bathroom. We just redid our master bathroom after living there 25 years. And our shower was horrendous to clean. It was always dirty, yet it was all this tile. You had to re-caulk it. The mold would get behind it. It took forever to clean every week. It never looked good. And so when we put a shower in, the number one thing I was looking for was what was going to be the easiest to clean. What's going to be the easiest shower to clean? So we put up one of those showers that just has like three walls, no tile, just like floor to ceiling, whatever it is. I think it's like a plastic thing. I thought it was marble. It's not. It's plastic. Anyway, I don't care. Super, super fast and easy to clean our shower. If we live there another 25 years, it's going to be great. Another decision Greg and I made is that we are not going to put in a play set for Grayson. We put in one of those swing sets for our kids and they played on it a little bit, but it was hard to assemble. It was hard to maintain. It was hard to get rid of. The kids didn't really play with it that much. It was hard to cut the grass around it for a decade. We're not doing that for grandchildren. Now, I have a cute little swing that I have hanging outside of our front door. We put those screw hooks into the ceiling when Joey was a baby, and Joey and Abby had a little baby swing there, and now Grayson has a little baby swing there, and that's what the grandparents are going to have. One little baby swing that you can swing in until you're like 2 years old, and that's it. Other than that, we will take you to the park. So what are you doing at home? What decisions can you make at home, forward thinking, that will save you a ton of time? Like, could we afford to put a swing set in? Yes. We couldn't afford to put a swing set in when our kids were little and we saved all the money and we put one in and it was great. I was a stay-at-home mom. We were in the backyard, the whole nine yards. But now we don't want the complexity and the amount of time it's going to take to maintain and the inconvenience it's going to be to have a swing set in our backyard. So we're just not going to have one. Also, you know, we're not going to have a whole bunch of kids that we're raising in this house. So we are not in that phase of life. So it doesn't work for us. Greg and I have already made that decision. There are a lot of things that Greg and I will talk about, you know, as Abby now has Grayson. So we have a grandchild living with us. We're like, okay, this is how we did it when we had children. Do we want to do this with Grayson? Or, you know, what do grandma and grandpa want to do in their house? Like what are going to be our things? There was a period where I said, I'm not childproofing upstairs. You know, Grayson can live in your apartment. That ship sailed like instantly. Don't you worry. The whole family room kitchen area is totally childproofed. We don't have tension gates. We screwed those things right into the wall. Like, it's just like when Joey and Abby were a baby. That whole family room kitchen area is 100% baby proof. Because it makes sense. Grayson lives with us. He's not visiting. He lives with us. So we are going through that. So what I would say to you about your house, when you're thinking about like all the actionable things you have to do at your house and you're checking them off, when you make the investment in the Productive Home Solution and you decide you are going to get organized your entire house, you are making the investment today of time and money into the freedom of the next 5 to 10 years. It'll take you, 12 to 18 months to get your home completely organized. But when it is completely organized for this dwelling in this phase of life, it will stay that way for 5, 10, sometimes 15, 20 years if you aren't going to go into a new phase of life and you aren't going to be adding a lot of people to your home. It is a tremendous investment of time and resources today for a huge return on future time and ability to have impact. But ultimately, when you're looking at six-figure time, the thing that we need time for and almost never enters our to-do list and we don't think about it until it is too late is how we invest our time with our family, which is our blue. And I mentioned the holiday blitz. Great way to think about like, what is important for your family at the holidays? What is important for you? What is the best way that you could take the time that you have for holiday preparation and enjoyment of the holidays and make sure that you're not doing anything that's adorable that you saw on Pinterest, but not something that means anything to you or your family? And making sure you do all of the traditions and the things that they are looking forward to and prioritize what people are looking forward to and remember over what the latest thing you saw on Instagram was. And when you do that, what happens is your to-do list for the holidays gets cut in half, sometimes down to a third. And then what you have is more time for your family. What do you do with this time with your family? How do you proactively plan for meaningful, memorable interactions with your family? I've talked about this quite a few times on the podcast about how as I was driving Joey to school when he was a freshman or a sophomore, and I was annoyed that it was taking me, more than an hour to drive him to school. And then also to pick him up, I was losing 2 hours a day for that. And I had to drive Abby to a different school. And I was in the car so much. So I started listening to podcasts, which fueled my brain. But also I realized, wow, Lisa, like this is a significant chunk of time that you have with a teenage boy who is going to go off to college and do whatever he's going to do as an adult. You will never get this time back. And, teenagers only want to talk when they want to talk. So of these 10 car rides per week, there were maybe 2 out of the 10 that he even wanted to talk and wasn't more interested in a video game or his phone or just sleeping in the car. And I was losing this time because I was so annoyed that I had to be doing the driving and I didn't really know how to communicate with a 14-year-old boy. Like, what are they interested in? Like, I've got other things on my mind. And luckily, I stopped and I thought about it and I was like, no, I'm going to be purposeful about this time. If Joey wants to talk, I'm going to talk about anything he wants to talk about. I thought about things to bring up for conversations. And if he seemed to take the bait, then we had the conversation. If he was in a grumpy mood or tired or just didn't want to talk, then he didn't. And I put it back in my mental Rolodex. And I really invested that time over the next couple of years of getting to know my son and purposely spending that car time with him. And now our relationship is unbelievable. And for Abby, that time came once she got pregnant. Like once she got pregnant and she had to go to all the doctor's appointments, she was ready to talk to me all the time. And I dropped everything to do so. And it's not always on your timetable, but if you don't have the time and the capacity for that kind of mental investment, then you miss it. And when you miss it, it's gone. And so I think that ultimately, yes, I want you to get organized so you can do what you're uniquely created to do. But the thing that you're really most uniquely created to do is be in relationship with the people that are nearest to you. Your spouse, your kids, your parents, your family of origin, the people that you work with each day, the people that you stand at the bus stop with. Like, The people that God has put in your path, those are the people that you're supposed to be in relationship with. And if you're so busy checking things off of your to-do list and task stacking and prioritizing everything so you can get more done, so you can have a bigger to-do list, what you miss is the people. The people. And sometimes it's you being buried in that busyness so that you don't have to wrestle with what you're uniquely created to do, so that you don't have to think about how maybe you could think differently about the situations or the people that are in your sphere of influence that are not easy to communicate with, but they're not going to change. So maybe you could change. Way easier to do the dishes, go grocery shopping at three different stores and not automatically pay your bills, right? I have to pay the bills. I have to go to the grocery store. I have to do all these things. I have so much on my to-do list. Do you? Do you really? Or is that your excuse for not becoming a six-figure time person, changing to be the person that time comes from, the person that can make the impact? You have the potential. You're on your way. I mean, you're listening at the end of this podcast. You're well on your way. But it's the prioritization that will make the difference 5 years, 10 years, 15 years in the future. You cannot go back and change the past. All you can do is you have the present to the future. Who are the people that are in your sphere of influence that if you had more time and you could eliminate some of this stuff that does not matter at all, that you could pour into them that would change not only them, but also you and create something new in the future? And that is how I think six-figure time people think about their work, about their family, about their impact, about the projects they say yes to, the projects they say no to, the things they allow on their to-do list, and the things where they're like, that isn't even going to get in the box. I'm not even writing it down. It's not worth my time. Not worth my time. What is your time worth? If you're a six-figure time person, your time is worth a minimum of $50 an hour. And for you, that may not be a lot of money, or for you, that may be more money than you would know what to do with. So change the number. Whatever number it takes for you to really start realizing how valuable your time is, how valuable you are, so that you can invest your time as wisely as possible. All right, next week on the podcast, we're going to start a new series. October is ADHD Awareness Month. I've got a great series for you.